This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. With about a month left before the November election, Newsmakers will be hosting a series of shows to hear from candidates for our state office in our area. Today we begin with Wisconsin's 96th Assembly District, which includes Vernon County, Crawford County, and part of Monroe County. Held by Republican Representative Lee Nearson since 2005, Viroqua business owner Alicia Lineberger is running as the Democratic candidate this fall. Representative Nearson was invited to today's interview, but chose not to participate. Joining us in studio is Alicia Lineberger, Democratic candidate for the 96th Assembly. And Alicia, you know, let's start off by hearing a little bit about yourself. You know, tell us about your background.
I grew up in a home of public school teachers. So both my parents were public school teachers. And so we were, you know, solidly middle class, and the serious emphasis on work ethic and service to community. And over in Cedarburg, Wisconsin, so kind of near Milwaukee. And then when I went to college, I went to the UW-Madison, and there I studied a number of things. I actually started out in art and ended up in biological aspects of conservation or conservation biology. And that taught me really about the interconnection of the world and the way we as humans interact with our environment and how that affects us. And then I went to Peace Corps, and I was in Central America in El Salvador for 3 years. And I learned there a lot about continuing. I worked in agriculture, so I was learned a lot more about agriculture and farming. And then really learned a lot about trade and markets and the way policy affects people on the ground. So it was sort of this building of knowledge, layers upon layers of experience. And then for the past 12 years, I've been working in renewable energy in Wisconsin. So that's very much the intersection of policy and economy, and how do you grow a new industry, and what kind of policies do you need to create a solid base for that industry and create really good, well-paying jobs.
And so what inspired you to run for the Assembly office?
I don't think we're being represented. I feel like there's quite a wide, how would you put it? There's a disassociation between the constituency and the things that they value and the way that they want to see the government working and what's actually happening in the Capitol. And I think it's getting to a point where it's dangerous. Especially as I've gotten into this process and I've looked more closely at Mr. Narrison's voting record and the voting record of all of the representatives, I feel like we're sort of in a dire place where corporations and profit are overwhelming the interests of us at home and affecting our children and our families. And I don't see it getting any better without some major changes in the other direction. So I decided to step up.
Can you give an example of an issue where you felt, the people's voice wasn't represented?
Sure. Well, I think just because I grew up with public school teachers, I heard a lot about what was going on with Act 10. And I was very involved my dad especially was very vocal about his opinion. And also because of what I'm doing now, I'm meeting school teachers and superintendents and school board members and parents all over the district. And so now I'm hearing those real life stories of how Act 10 has affected the schools and the teachers. And then in addition to that, the legislature has taken more and more public funding away from the schools, not only Act 10, but through controlling property taxes and levies, and then also shifting public school monies to private voucher schools, and at an alarming rate. And I just feel like our schools, especially in rural areas, because of so many factors, including completely disregarding the advice of Superintendent Tony Evers and his ideas of changing the funding formula so you have fair funding for rural schools. All of that together, there's this whole soup of moving money from our public school system into private hands. And the effect, of course, is children having a very difficult time finding a place where they can excel and be their best. And that's what schools are for. So every child has an equal opportunity. I think we all agree on that. And I don't think that that's what's happening. I don't think that's what our legislators, of course some legislators are fighting hard to keep it that way, but Mr. Narrison in specific has voted a number of times, even though he keeps saying he voted against Act 10. There's a number of other votes he's taken that shows that that was just one kind of signature vote, but in reality, he goes right along with the agenda.
Another issue affecting K-12 education, this year and specifically, a number of superintendents from area school districts, both rural and urban, have said that there's a shortage of teachers in our area.
Yeah, we heard it.
Yeah, and that not enough people are pursuing education as a career. Is this something that the state needs to address?
Yeah, by funding our public schools in a good way, getting back to a time when, you know, they say... The superintendents are saying there was a time when they would get 17 or 18 applications for a particular position. Now there are certain positions where they get zero and others where they might get two or three to choose from. And then there's this competitive, so it's not anymore like, okay, this is how much we have and we have this great community and all these other benefits. These kids are coming out of school, the ones that are coming in to it with massive amounts of debt. And the salaries don't meet that debt. And then you have a number of very experienced teachers who have been there for a very long time, retiring after Act 10, just walking away. They're disgusted. And so you're losing these years of experience that would help these younger folks come in and have that sort of base of this is what works with these kids. It's really a disastrous formula altogether.
Another issue in education, obviously, is higher education, and we've seen that on a national level and a state level.
Right.
Obviously, talking about student loan debt, but also funding for higher ed. With Western Technical College having a campus in Viroqua, do you feel like technical colleges are, you know, a part of the conversation that's going on about higher ed, or do they need to be better represented?
That's a good question, and I haven't actually thought about it that much, to be honest. I don't know. My experience in terms of the higher education is just, again, watching the funding being cut and tuition being frozen and... technical colleges are an important part of the, well, especially coming from a business where we use a lot of technical skills. Those technical colleges do, I don't know, they create this kind of middle ground for people that aren't necessarily inspired by the intellectual, but are very inspired by the creative. And, so I don't know if they're missing out, but they shouldn't be.
In the past year, we've seen Governor Walker increase grant money for Wisconsin's technical colleges. Is this enough to provide opportunities for students to, you know, pursue education at a technical college?
I don't think I know enough about it to answer. I haven't seen that he's increased the amount of money that's going to technical colleges?
There was a bill that was passed, that was signed in March that increased grant money for technical colleges for students pursuing it.
Huh. Well, that's great. I wasn't aware of that. Thank you.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the 96th Assembly District in the first of our series on regional elections this November. We're here with Alicia Lineberger, Democratic candidate for the 96th Assembly District. With the massive amounts of flooding that have been impacting your district, public infrastructure is obviously an issue that, people are thinking about as communities start to rebuild. I know that Governor Walker has said that, rebuilding this time, because flooding has happened in that region before, there needs to be a better way to prevent future flooding. Do you have ideas on how communities or counties can approach rebuilding after the damage that's been done?
Approach rebuilding or prevent it happening?
Both.
Living in the center of it, approach rebuilding. There certainly needs to be some state help. But from what I understand, there was so much damage in flooding earlier this summer in northern Wisconsin that a lot of the emergency funding from the state went up there, and so there's not a lot left. We don't normally experience this kind of flooding at this time of year. In the area, it is particularly damaging to crops because the crops are in the field and need to get out of the field, and in addition to the roads, which are already in an abysmal state. In a short-term way, I don't have a good answer. I do know, though, that what's been going on in terms of loosening standards around shoreline restrictions, so a private landowner's ability to do what to go ahead and dredge shorelines and change the shape of the shorelines or not plant along the shores, that does affect it, because so farther upstream, obviously, if the shorelines of the rivers are different and there's not as much protection, the water's going to run faster, and that the faster running water causes more damage, of course. It's a kind of situation that prevention would be worth so much, and yet I see what happens is there's emergency money to sort of patch up what happens, but after that, there's no thought about how are we going to prevent this in the future. I haven't seen that at all. And certainly when it happened this year, and I'm running, and I thought, well, if I was an assembly person, how would I do this differently? Certainly thought about looking into going to scientists and looking into how do we prevent this kind of flooding, not the actual flooding itself, because that's such a large question, and it does have to do with certainly the way the rain patterns are changing all over the planet, and we're not prepared for that at all. But it certainly seems like we could have structures in place that would slow down the water in strategic places. I do know that there have been attempts at that, and they just wash out. So obviously we haven't done enough. But they've been private attempts, not state attempts. So people on their own land have tried to create structures and barriers, and they just wash out.
Another public infrastructure issue that you mentioned was, of course, roads.
Right.
There's a large state conversation going on right now about, funding for future road projects.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on how these projects should be funding, and if the state is providing enough funding to maintaining our roads?
I went to the Vernon County, what was it called? It was like Just Fix It transportation meeting the other night on Thursday, and apparently there were meetings all over the entire state in every county. And at the meeting of Vernon County, all of the townships were represented, and each of the townships told stories about the state of their roads, the state of the equipment for upkeep, and it is... Okay, let's just put it this way. The state is not taking care of the people, especially in the rural areas. And that is a primary responsibility of the government, is to take care of the roads. No one can do business without the roads being taken care of, and it actually, it of course, affects our safety. And those, to me, are basic, essential responsibility of government officials. And then you see Scott Walker's proposed 17-19 budget, where he's saying he's not going to raise any taxes, so there's no gas tax in it. And the amount of money that he's proposing to raise the budget by is not nearly enough. And in our meeting, those rural folks, we know, they know, that when it comes down to it and the budget hearings are happening, that the urban areas are going to fight like heck to get that money, and the rural areas are going to be starved out again. And we're already in a dire situation with the roads. Meanwhile, the total state budget has increased by $7.5 billion in the last 6 years. There is money. It's just not coming back to our communities. And that is what's heartbreaking to me. And that's a big reason why I'm running, because I don't believe that this state doesn't have enough money. I believe that we have enough money, and we have awesome, we have great businesses. We have had an amazing tourist industry, and so many of those things on the tourist industry, we're giving away all of the resources that make our state so beautiful. We're defunding our state parks. We're defunding the DNR that protects our natural resources. We're allowing frac sand mines to go in, which destroy the landscape and destroy our water sources. They're writing high capacity. In fact, Mr. Narrison is an author of the High Capacity Well Bill, which threatens all of our groundwater and threatens our streams and lakes and rivers, and that people come here to enjoy. And then the roads in the rural areas are entirely necessary. There's no way to get anything in or out of there. So we can produce all we can in our district, especially in Vernon County. We have so many small farmers, and those farmers depend on being able to get things out. We also have a number of very industrious small businesses, manufacturing businesses, that need to be able to get products in and things out. And the condition of the roads is threatening the viability. So if the state does not think that we can raise the gas tax, if Mr. Walker thinks we cannot raise the gas tax, he's not representing us. I don't know. I have some ideas about who he's representing, but it's not us. Because I think everyone in that Republican, Democrat, Independent, whatever, it doesn't matter. We all understand that you raise the gas tax a little bit. And what that does is it taxes the folks who are using the roads, who put the most wear and tear on the roads. Because if you get lower gas mileage, you're probably a heavier vehicle, and that causes more damage to the road. So it's putting the responsibility on the folks who are using it, and then turning around and taking that and distributing it so that we can all share equally good, safe roads. So I personally, that's in my district, it's on the top of everybody's mind, especially after the floods.
Alicia Leinberger is a business owner in Viroqua and the Democratic candidate for Wisconsin's 96th Assembly District. She's here with us today to kick off our November election series. Over the next month, we hope to hear from regional candidates for state office about their stance on issues affecting the Cooley region. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation with Alicia Leinberger about the 96th Assembly District. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, WPR.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at WPR.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. This week, we're kicking off our series of shows on the November elections. With about a month left before Election Day, we hope to talk with regional candidates for state office about their thoughts on issues affecting their district. Today, we're talking about the 96th Assembly District. Republican incumbent Lee Nearson was invited to today's interview, but chose not to participate. Joining us in the studio is Alicia Leinberger, a business owner in Viroqua and Democratic candidate for the 96th Assembly. And Alicia, you know, what do you think is the most important issue impacting your district?
I think it's a good question, because as soon as you answer, then you start relating it to other parts of society. And what's the most important issue of all? I mean, it has to be wages. We're an agricultural district, and at least Vernon County and Crawford County are impoverished counties compared to the state, and certainly the agriculture has something to do with it. But also, I think the lack of, well, really what happens, this is how I see it economically, is that once you start losing your small dairy farms, your family-sized dairy farms, and you lose those when they don't even have to be local, but when you have a lot of very large 4,000-head dairy farms in the state, and that supply is flooding the market, and now we see milk prices at very low levels. And so we lose dairy farms again en masse. And when you lose those dairy farms, you lose this economic base. You lose all of those families, all of their children. They are economic actors. They shop in the stores. They go to the schools. And of course, they're important parts of the community in so many ways, in churches and as part of ball teams and everything. As that fabric starts to be ripped away, I feel like that's the base of the problem, is you're losing the farming community to these very, very large factory-style farms. Not necessarily in our district, but even if it's in other parts of the state, it pulls at those economic threads. The biggest driver of economy in our district actually is organic farming. And part of the reason why that's so important is because it plays in an entirely different market. So folks that are organic dairy farmers have a much more stable price. And I think that's actually why our district is still thriving as much as it is because of the organic dairy farming and Organic Valley Co-op, actually. I think that's pretty obvious to everyone. And it's interesting to me that Mr. Nearson, after 12 years in the legislature and as ag chair, has never written one piece of legislation that helps support more of that, helps other farmers come into that market base. So that's in farming. And then I think just as a wage issue, the minimum wage of $7.25 an hour is, it's abominable. I think it was $7.25 an hour when I was in college. It was pretty close to that. You know, that's 20 plus years ago. I don't know how any family could do that. And so in our district, you see mothers and fathers having to work three jobs just to make ends meet. And that means when they come home, they are exhausted. They do not have time to be with their children in a way that creates the kind of loving relationships. Of course, this isn't everyone, but there's too much of this in our district. And it puts immense stresses on the whole family. And then those ripple out into the community and into the schools, and the teachers have a harder time. Even they're already stressed out, the teachers, and then you have these children who are coming from home lives that are stressed out, and that makes it very difficult for them to sit still in class and pay attention. I mean, okay, so you have all of that, and then the Democrats brought a minimum wage increase bill earlier in this year, and I thought it was really actually very modest. They wanted $8.20 after a year, and then in 2 years it would have gone up to $10.10, I think, $10 in there. That does not seem unreasonable to me. As a business owner, a small rural business owner, granted I have a specialized business in renewable energy, but my training wage is much more than twice the minimum wage. And the reason why is because I value those folks that come and work with me more than I value profiting myself. And I think that that's what's going on and why we can't. Mr. Narasimhan, of course, voted against the increase in minimum wage. It never actually got out of committee. He voted not to let it out of committee. That is not representing us. How can he even look anyone in the eye knowing that he thinks that they could be paid $7.25 an hour and that's okay with him? That's not okay with me. So I guess, you know, the whole economics of the rural is the problem, and everything feeds into that.
Returning to agriculture that you were mentioning earlier, you know, what do you think could help organic farmers in our state? Because, you know, organic farming is such a big part of the, you know, of industry in your counties.
Well, one thing that we know helps is folks that want to move from conventional into organic. You can create programs that are very cost-effective state programs to help them with those fees, because often that's the biggest barrier. There's a three-year transition, and during that 3 years, it's challenging, and you need help from peers, and you need also their certification fees so that the folks that do the certifying can come out and make sure that your farming practices are matching what they're hoping for, but also provide the support that you need. So I think that that's a very cost-effective method of helping folks come into that market, for one. Organic farmers can always use help in distributing their products. There have been bills, well, for example, the farm-to-school program in our area that was started in our area and now is all over the state, which Mr. Narasimhan voted against funding for. Those types of direct market. So the key to helping people have access to good organic food and not have it cost an arm and a leg is direct marketing. So that you have the farmers direct marketing to maybe a food distributor or a kitchen that creates food for food distribution. And we have that happening. For example, the Vernon Economic Development Association and Sue Noble have created many programs and grants to help them do that. But that's coming from her and her own initiative. That's not coming from the state, and that's not coming from any legislative policy, which it could. All of these things could help increase. So you both want to help farmers come into the organic market, and you also want to help the market get the organic produce. And both of those can happen through legislative policy and through debt cap.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the 96th Assembly District in the first of our series on regional elections this November. We're here with Alicia Leinberger, Democratic candidate for the 96th Assembly District. Another issue that's been talked about in your region is broadband expansion.
Right.
You know, tell me a little bit about how you feel, you know, the state needs to be responding to this issue.
Yeah. Back in 2011, the administration and the legislators decided not to accept the federal funding for expansion of broadband. And that was a $23 million grant from the federal government. And that was incredibly irresponsible. I have a feeling that there's a lot underlying this, and I have a feeling that it has to do. They also a little while ago, the Public Service Commission deregulated this and it is allowing more private infiltration into the broadband markets, and I can't really get at the meat of this, but then so they reject the $23 million, and then this year they come out and they're like, oh, we've got this great broadband, we have $1 million, woohoo! But along with $1 million, if you want that $1 million and you want to be part of that, I can't even remember what they called it, like broadband ready community, you have to put in an ordinance that basically gives over all of your rights to have any control over the quality of that or the price of that forever. That's very suspicious to me. Anytime that in order to get a little tiny bit of a crumb of money, your community has to give over local control and rights, I think it's probably not worth it. I think there's something going on there. So when you look at this pattern of we're going to reject the federal money, and that's happening in healthcare too, and then you're going to have to do this thing the way we tell you, and you're going to have to give up some of your rights to do it, that's very suspicious. And I don't think that is representing us. I think somebody else is being represented in that deal.
Do you think broadband expansion is needed in your area? Why is it important?
Yeah. Right in the center of the district, it doesn't seem to be a big problem, but definitely in the south of the district, not in Prairie either, but in there's this kind of hinterland in this beautiful area, Gay's Mills and Soldier's Grove and Rolling Ground and even down to Wazika, where it's very hilly and there's still quite a bit of forest and beautiful running streams, but those folks have no access, and there's a big discussion actually right now going on in Gay's Mills about it between the co-op, and there are two folks serving there. One is the local co-op and one is I can't remember the name of the other one. But they haven't been able to collaborate, and so there are people not being served. Honestly, I'm pretty sure that there are creative ways to do this. And I also think that the state should be offering money for the folks to decide. Give it to them, string free, and let them figure out how to take care of it, because they know their local communities and they know where it's needed more than anyone. So that would be, I would be more inclined to have those conversations at a local level rather than having these state imposed. That would be how I would handle it.
You mentioned healthcare, and obviously access to healthcare is, a big issue in rural communities.
Yeah.
What improvements do you think need to be made to healthcare?
Well, number one, we need to take the federal funds. And we need to use the federal program and everything that they've learned. And that is absolutely number one. And immediately that would allow us to cover about 63,000 more people in the state. And it would save us. This is actually kind of an astounding number. And I know it's hard to do numbers on radio, but it would save us for, right now we're spending $3.2 billion, more than we need to, because we rejected the federal funding, okay? We would have saved our state $400 million. That $400 million could have been used for broadband or road or a number of other things, schools, other things that are important to everyone and that we share. Instead, they rejected it, cost us $3.2 billion. Our premiums are going up because of the way it's being administered, and because of the way the healthcare industry is working in that system. So we would take the money, insure 63,000 more people, our premiums would begin to go down as we start sharing more of the resources, and then the real challenge I think for our rural district is we need to have access to local doctors. And because of the way that the administration set it up, for certain people, that's very challenging. They have to go very far to Madison or La Crosse, but yeah, even Madison, to get the kind of care that they need. And it doesn't have to be that way. So I think that if we use the federal program and we take the federal funds, we're going to save ourselves a bunch of money. We're going to insure a lot more people. And I think that it's that I don't know this because we can't look at how it is until it is, but I think it's going to help people get care more locally.
In your bio, you say that you believe in conservative values that benefit local economies, public education, air, land, and water rights, healthcare for all citizens, and vibrant rural communities. You know, why did you want to use the word conservative when talking about your values?
Yeah, that's kind of funny. Because there's two kinds of conservative. There's a fiscally conservative, and then there's a socially conservative. And so socially, I'm not conservative. I very much enjoy and thrive on diversity. I actually am enjoying, surprisingly, going out and talking with people and listening and to all kinds of people I never would have had an opportunity to meet. So to me, that's wonderful. But in a fiscal way, I'm very conservative. And I'm conservative in the way that I do not believe in borrowing and wasting money. I don't believe in borrowing and wasting anything, actually. But and certainly the same goes with resources. I do not believe in blowing all of our resources right now and then either through pollution or extraction and then expecting our children to be able to live in a world like that where the water is compromised, the air is compromised, and the land is compromised. That's my first responsibility. So I'm very conservative in that sense. And then when it comes to fiscally, I'm also very conservative in the sense that I am particularly good at taking a limited amount of resources and making it go a very long way. And that's one of the reasons I'm in renewable energy, because for both of those reasons, you conserve your resources in an environmental way. And in addition, you're investing now. And that investment over time saves you a whole lot of money, and you control the cost of your electricity. So those sorts of ideals would be the kind of ideals that I would approach the budget. For example, the transportation budget last year, against the advice of the chair of transportation and against many of the Republican legislators, and many Republicans in my district, Governor Walker decided to borrow $1 billion to fund our transportation. That means that we are paying $2.5 million in interest for 20 years. That's completely irresponsible. We're paying we're paying the interest to somebody else. We get nothing from it, and it's on our children's back. And then he comes up and says, oh, I'm sorry, but we're still $1 billion short. I can't actually finish a lot of these. You know, that's not the way that I function.
Your opponent has held this office since 2005. You know, how do you hope to, or do you hope to approach things differently?
Than him?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would approach things very differently from him. And I think first and foremost is the relationship that he has with constituents. As you can see right here, this is sort of the way that he interacts. Is you can, Lee's a super nice guy, and when you see him out and about at a parade or whatever, he'll shake your hand and talk to you. But when it comes to talking about issues, real issues, and how his vote goes, he's silent. So we don't really, I think his strategy is to pretty much pretend he's a middle-of-the-road kind of a guy, that he's a moderate, and hope that nobody looks behind the veil. But this time we're looking behind the veil, and we're saying, look, is this actually what you want? Do you want somebody who votes 99% of the time with Walker, who sits there and keeps saying, oh, I voted against Act 10, and I voted against the budget because of the transportation? But then when you look farther in at his votes, you see that that's not at all what he was doing. that those were just sort of straw man votes to make you think that he's doing things a certain way. But when you really talk to him about issues, he is completely unwilling to return your call or get into a conversation about why he believes the way he voted. That's not how I would be. I have an office on Main Street on Highway 14, and I would love to have a couple of times a week where my doors are open to citizens in the district. So a citizen lobby in the district versus, I'm tempted to say this, but I don't know if how realistic this is, but I don't really want any lobbyists, any corporate lobbyists whatsoever in Madison. I don't want to talk to them. I don't need to talk to them. I know what their message is, but I want to hear from the people in my district and have conversations. And if we disagree, that's awesome. That's all the better, because that means that there's something that I don't understand yet. So I think that's the major difference, is I'm very much looking forward with engaging and then also creating public forums for people to come together and talk about the problems that are most challenging to them and come up with ways, whether it's in our community or through state policy, that we can work on those and help to solve them.
We've been talking with Alicia Leinberger, Democratic candidate for Wisconsin's 96th Assembly District, about her stance on issues important in the November election. Representative Lee Nearson was invited to today's interview, but chose not to participate. Next week, we'll continue our series of shows on the November elections with the candidates for the 94th Assembly District, Democratic incumbent Steve Joyle and Republican candidate Jillian Bradley. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers.